Hi, everybody. Welcome to All Have Another. I'm your host, Lindsay. Thank you so much for being here today. Happy Mother's Day. Today is a special episode. This is episode 9, and today we're talking with Marianne Miller. Marianne Miller is a parenting instructor, and this episode is a little bit different than what we're used to. It's a little bit of a different topic. I found Marianne, so she came to my MOPS group, and she was a speaker. And about 10 minutes into our talk, I thought I have to have her on the podcast. Now, this was before I even launched the show, and I already had a vision of what the show would look like, but no matter what that vision was, I thought this woman is speaking truth, and she is making me feel confident in my parenting, and I want to share this with my listeners. I know that a lot of you are young parents, and I think that you'll find some really sound advice. So thank you so much for listening, and I'm telling you, Marianne is, if I could just carry her around with me everywhere I go so that when I have a question about what my three-year-old is doing, how I should react to it, and she could answer it for me, that would be amazing. So I hope that you find this episode helpful, and it's encouraging to you. Before we get started with Marianne, would you subscribe to the show and share it with your friends? When you go to subscribe and when you rate and review, it helps other people find the show. So if you haven't rated or reviewed it yet, hop over to iTunes. It takes like 1 minute to do that, and that would be so helpful. So, okay, let's get started talking with Marianne. Thanks, everybody. Hi, Marianne. How are you?
Hey, good. Thanks for checking in on me, Lindsay.
Thanks for coming on to the show. So for everybody listening, I met Marianne. She came and spoke to my MOPS group a couple weeks ago, and that's Mothers of Preschoolers. And she had me laughing and had me feeling like I wasn't so alone and had me feeling like I kind of wanted to carry her around in my pocket with me when I had meltdowns with my three-year-old. Marianne is a teacher, a parenting instructor, a financial counselor, and an author. So I'll go ahead and let you kind of explain what got you to where you are right now in your life and your background a little bit.
Okay. I'm not actually teaching right now. I'm more of a substitute teacher at the middle school. So I am. My background was in middle school education, and so I did that for 8 years until the kids came. And you know, I had the experience that I think you did, where it's a lot of chaos and a lot of craziness. And I just kind of found my way, and just felt that desire to share things that I've learned through this mistake, and just a shift in perspective that can be really helpful to moms. And so honestly, it was really I became a Christian during that time. And that's what drove me to a relationship with Christ. Is I was just having three kids very close together, and I couldn't walk in it alone. And I just think at that point when I became a Christian is when God just really used me to bring truth to moms. And so that's kind of how it got started. So I was certified in parenting instructing. I don't use anything that I learned from that. This is all just personal experience, and I just have a passion for when I see parents with that look of, oh my gosh, what have we gotten ourselves into? That's really my passion of saying, no, it's okay. It's supposed to be like that. Like, you need to enjoy that. So that's kind of where my heart's come from. And then the financial counseling was an opportunity through Crown Ministries, which is a volunteer Christian organization, to meet with people one-on-one and help them with their finances. We started that when our four kids were all little. I think the last one was a baby. And what we found was that the families we were helping were all high income producing. Mm-hmm. And that was a surprise. And so then I really became just impassioned to bring that truth to families, to say, wait a second, let's not chase the Joneses, because we've been meeting with the Joneses with their $100,000 and $200,000 incomes, and it's not something we want our kids chasing without teaching them, you know, how much is enough. So those are all those things. Does that answer it?
Yeah, it does. Well, and I liked in your book how you kind of said that your dad instilled that in you, like, even once he started making a good, substantial income, he was still push mowing your lawn, and you guys are still living the exact way that you always lived. And I feel like, especially now, that's really hard for people to do, because they're sending their kids to school and they want to give them what everybody else has, you know?
And the problem nowadays is that we can.
Mm-hmm.
What used to happen is that we didn't have access to credit like that. So it was very easy for parents to say, nope, we can't buy that, we can't buy that, we can't buy that. And now we just don't have that built in no. We have more of a, well, technically we could. Right. So why are we saying no?
Yeah.
And that's the problem that I think we see is, hey, wait, why are we saying no? Because I could afford it, so to speak. So that's the problem.
Well, and right now I'm in the stage of life, and I also pulled this from your book. I was just thinking about it. Well, you were saying how your husband kind of says to you, not everybody wants this unsolicited advice, maybe. That's but true. When you're at Target and you're watching a mom of a three-year-old have a meltdown, and you can kind of look at the situation and say, does she want my encouragement? Will this make the day better? And I mean, I'm already struggling with that. I have a one-year-old and a three-year-old. And, you know, it's honestly, this happens. And this is a fault of mine. When we go to Target, I buy my three-year-old a pack of fruit snacks, like just to keep him like quiet while we're at Target and I can get my stuff done. And you said you had seen a mom, somebody was having a meltdown, and you kind of said, I think that looks like a boy that has enough toys. And she ended up being really grateful, and you had a great conversation, which inspired you to write the book.
Right.
How do you kind of like weigh out that situation? Like, is this mom going to be turned off by me saying something, or is she going to be uplifted?
Me, I always try to be encouraging. And sometimes, you know, I wanted to come alongside of her. She was trying to say no mm-hmm. to her son. And I could just see that she was weakening and he was winning. And so, in that instance, I felt like, hey, she needs the backing of, hey, you're okay to say no. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was providing her. You know, I just know there's times when a child is having a meltdown and I see the parent still trying to talk to them as if that child were in that body. And that's where my husband will always try to push me away and say, no, you don't need to say anything. And I feel like, yes, I do. I need to tell that parent, stop talking to that child. They're not even there. Like, you're not going to get anywhere with that child, and to just, you know, don't try to resolve anything. I think that's also what's changed. We live in a culture where because of reality TV, I think we think we're being judged. Mm-hmm. And I think many times we are. So we lack that confidence to say, no, this is okay. This is just my child having a fit, and I'm okay with that. And that's part of the encouragement I hope to bring people when I do cross over and talk to them, is to say, it's okay. This is a boy having a fit, and this is what being three looks like, and you're okay. So that's kind of my message.
Well, that was one of my favorite things you said when you talked to our MOPS group was, I think you said, I think a lot of times we expect our kids to be older than they are.
Correct.
He's three. Like, he's going to have a fit, and you can't reason with that. And you said, we're behaving because we're adults. He's being three.
Right.
So we can't sit there and reason with him. So would you say, this is me asking you advice on my, like, when my three-year-old's doing that, do you kind of just let him ride it out and give him a hug and tell him you love him and say, we're going to get through this, and you're a big boy and you can make these good decisions, and then move on?
Yeah, I think what I would encourage parents is not to be afraid of their kids' emotions. Mm. I think the kid's frustrated, he's angry, he's sad, and we get wanting to fix it and to stop it. So I think part of it is just acknowledging, oh, honey, you're really sad, you're really frustrated. So I think it's helpful, rather than trying to stop it, is to name what they're feeling, and yep, you're feeling sad, aren't you? And that's okay. And I think when we don't try to stop it, and just to be able to say, hey, you're sad and that's okay. Because I think what happens is we'll say no to the whatever experience, the child's going to be sad. And we send the message when we jump in there with a three-year-old and we start reasoning, we start telling them why we're not doing it, and we tell them. And then that just really keeps them in their state of sadness, anger, frustration, whatever it is, because we're reasoning with a three-year-old as if they were reasoning back with us, rather than just saying, you're sad and that's okay. Mm. It's okay that you're sad. Mom's going to help you. We're going to, you know, or you're angry, you're very angry. I think it also helps to talk through, instead of trying to be on the opposite side with them and explaining why they can't have the toy, why we can't do this, step aside and get on their side and just say, you wanted that toy, didn't you? You really liked it. You liked the way it, this. You wish we could bring it home, because now you're on their side. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And they're not fighting you anymore because you're saying, it's okay to want that. We're not getting it, but it's okay. Mom sees why you liked it. Does that make sense? Or you're angry at your sister right now because she hit you. That would make me upset too. But I'm not going to let you And that's another language that I like. I'm not going to let you, you know, I'm not going to let you hit her. And that's when we can step in. But I am going to let you be really, really angry, because you can be angry. And then if we're talking about a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old, now we're talking about a different situation where we can, if this is an ongoing problem where they can't handle their emotions, now we're going to set up. I mean, I could talk for a while what we can set up, but it's calling attention to, hey, you're 5 now, you're 6 now, and do you realize that your go-to is to lose control? I'd hate for you to continue to let your emotions control you. Let me see if mom can help you with that. And then you can do things like timing them and seeing how long they're out of control, because that's very empowering. We can't make them stop crying, and we have to be able to realize we can't make them stop, but we can time them, and we can tell them that, you know, 7 minutes of crying for a 7-year-old's probably plenty, and after that you might not be getting enough sleep. You might be having too much sugar. You might be, you know, there's lots of things. You might need to work outside more and help out physically. You know, there's lots of things we can tie it to help them. So does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that. And I've been, I don't know if he's too young, but I've kind of been using the, you're almost 4 now, you can make good decisions. I think that's like a direct quote you said at MOPS. I've been saying that to Marshall a lot, and I do kind of feel like he receives it a little bit, even though he's going to be 4 in June, so he's pretty young, but...
No, and he still might be acting 3. And when he's 4, he still might be acting 3. But to hold that out there as a, it's okay, you'll get there, I think that's very encouraging and very motivating.
So what's your favorite part when you go to speak to these MOPS groups or speak to young parents? Like, what is your biggest satisfaction out of leaving one of these, you know, meetings or talks or whatever?
Oh, honestly, I go back to the same ones now for over a decade. And so I could get weepy. It just happened this week, but I had somebody that is back as a mentor mom, and she said, you spoke to me when my kids were little, and now they're teenagers. And she was just saying those things that have made her journey to being teenagers so much more pleasant, because she gave up things that she thought she had control over, because she put that relationship first. And she says, you know, I am so enjoying my teens because I backed off where I needed to back off, and I was confident where I needed to be confident. So that was a real blessing for me to hear that. And I feel like that's how God uses my message, is to be able to say, you know what? We live in a culture that wants a quick fix. They want us to raise a kid that doesn't cry. And instead, I want to raise a man who understands his feelings. And that's a different goal. Does that make sense?
That almost makes me cry just hearing you say that. So when you talk to the group, you went through kind of like levels of kids. And
I made that up, though.
You did. I love it. And I'll let you go through that explanation, but I very much relate to who I think my 3.5-year-old is, maybe a level 4 kid. Maybe someone might disagree and say he's a level 3. And I think what I'm seeing in my 1.5-year-old is turning into maybe a level 2. So a much easier to handle child for me. Can you kind of explain those levels and how you did that at the group?
And again, I made it up, so it's not going to be written anywhere. But this is the message that I want people to understand, is that, you know, whether you're a believer or not, I don't know how you could look at a child that came out of you and your husband and see those differences and not realize, hey, we don't have as much control as we thought we had. You know, this kid came to me with very strong, this is my first one, and I think that happens a lot. Your firstborn can be that more challenging child, so I can build out the levels. But I would love for people to recognize, man, this is how they're designed. This is how they're wired. And because they're wired like this, it is harder to be their mom at 3. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful to be my kid's mom at 19 right now. I could cry at the things that he takes his strong stand for. But when he was 3, I was crying. And it wasn't because, you know, it was horrible. So the levels are basically, I got thinking about how in school there's remedial classes and they're just easier than the higher levels. And they go at a slower pace and it's easier material. And some kids are just level 1 kids. That's a kid that does not get on the kitchen table because kitchen tables are for eating. And it would never cross their mind that they would climb upon the kitchen table, because that's not what it's for. And that's a level 1. Level two is your average classes in high school. That's your kid that is going to get on the kitchen table, and you're going to tell him to get off because kitchen tables are for eating. And he's going to say, oh, okay. You know, there might be a couple more repeated here and there when he really feels the urge to get on the table. But in general, he's got it. And so that's your level two kid. Level three is more like the honors parenting. And those kids are just wired with a little bit more independence, a little bit more energy. That's definitely a wiring. You can't make some of these kids calm down. I mean, you physically can duct tape them, but you know, in general, you can see a kid that's high energy, you can see a kid that's low energy, and you can't change them, like that part of them. So level three just has a little bit more, and that's the kid that's going to get on the kitchen table. You tell them to get off, and the very next day they do it again. You tell them again, the next day you do it again, and you start to wonder, what am I doing wrong? And that's when I would encourage parents to just think, nope, this kid learns, but it's the hard way. Mm-hmm. And level four, where you might be, could learn the hardest way, which is the kid that gets on the kitchen table, you tell him to get off, and he jumps and runs from you, and it's really even hard to get him off. You put him down, and he pops right back up, because he needs to know for sure, these are your AP kids. I mean, those classes count as college credit. So there are some kids that are just challenging compared to the level one. And the problem comes, and this is my message, if you've got a level four and your friend's got a level one, mm-hmm. you can't look at that kid that she's raising and say, what am I doing wrong? So that's really my message. It doesn't mean we don't do anything. Man, we got to be all over those kids. They learn, but they learn the hard way. And so we've got to really be consistent. Again, I can talk about that for a long time, but just knowing that some kids are more challenging is very helpful.
Well, yeah, and I've seen that. I mean, I can remember back to when my three-year-old was 8 months old and we couldn't go to a restaurant because he wanted to be everywhere. And not that, I mean, that was just him being a curious 8-month-old. But I would see these other babies or like kids that were learning to walk and they'd just sit in their high chairs. And I would say, what, like, how is this happening? That, well, you know? And now my second kid will do that. My second kid will, and then we can go to a restaurant because my older one is almost four and he can sit in color. Right. And my second one will sit in the high chair for like almost 2 hours.
Maybe you need a sticker that says, don't compare yourself to me. He's the left one. He's easy. Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, and I have friends who have their first child and they're struggling with the things that I was struggling with my first, you know, at, you know, their kids might be two by now or whatever. And I'm just tell them, I get it. That's how, you know, and don't compare your kid to Lewis, my younger one, because he is just chill.
Right.
I didn't know it was possible for me to have a child like that.
Look at that.
And then my first, you know, when he completely loses it, and it'll oftentimes happen when he's up too late and, you know, we're trying to get him to bed. My husband, I don't think he grasps what my son is feeling as much as I grasp it, because I think he's very much like me. Right. And, you know, the things that my mom told me about how I was as a child, and even how I am now, just how my personality is, and my, I'm a little bit stubborn, and, you know, I see that in him, and I see him losing control, and I can, like, feel it. I can almost cry with him because I know how out of control he feels. So a lot of times I tell my husband, like, I get it. I get what he's feeling right now. Which is going back to what you said, tell him it's okay that you're sad right. And you can cry.
And I think it's understanding what we have control over and what we don't. And what happens sometimes is you get those challenging kids and then you think as the big, bad, bold parent, I can make this kid stop crying. And that's where we lose relationship because they have the power to stop mm-hmm. crying, and we can't make them stop crying. So with kids that are challenging anyway, we have got to know what we have control over and what we don't. And when we step into their area where they have the ultimate control, for example, say thank you. Mm. Okay, we've stepped into their area. And as much as we want to show everyone that we've got polite kids, mm-hmm. aren't I a great mom? Look at my kids say thank you. And I think that's the culture we're in. If my kid says thank you, it means I'm a great mom. And then likewise, unfortunately, if my kid doesn't say thank you, it means I'm a bad mom. I can't get my kid to say thank you. And what happens is we feel that pressure to, why isn't my kid saying thank you? and realizing, hey, they have control over that. So if we step into that battle, that's one where I have, you know, I do try to help a parent out of that situation just by, like, you, that child is gaining so much power on that parent when you play that game, so that ultimately if he actually does say thank you, you, like, you did it, you got him to say it through enough threats and bribes and yay, look at my kid said it, you lost. And you lost so big that you have no idea how big you lost, because one, that kid knows how much power they have over you. They know how much they just freaked you out and how much they upset you. And them ultimately doing it, now they did it for you, the bad guy, the bad person that did it. I want my kid to say thank you because he knows that saying thank you is the right thing to do. And from that heart of gratitude, thank you. So I can say, you can say thank you to Mrs. So-and-so. And at the point when I realize that they're not going to do it, then I can look the person in the eye and say, he's very grateful for his things. He's just not ready. And then now I've escaped the battle. He's not ready to say it right now. And then later I can catch up with them and say, hey, I hope that you figure out how to say thank you to people. It makes them feel good. And that's all I'm going to do. And I just avoided a giant power struggle.
That is so interesting and good to hear, because I struggle with that with my own. And it's because he's got a little bit of a thing with, you know, like it was just with strangers in general. He doesn't, he's not the kind of kid that's going to say, oh, hi. And,
you know, he's that's not him. And I have that kid. I mean, it was me.
Yeah.
When that kid got born, I was like, this is the kid that's going to say, hi, Mrs. So-and-so, how are you today? It took four kids.
Yeah.
To get that
you had a kid like that.
Yeah, the fourth one.
Yeah, so, and I feel like that, you know, even at like Trader Joe's when they give them a sticker, and I'm like, oh, great, now I have to force my kid to say thank you. So I usually say thank you, and when he doesn't say it, I say thank you and let it go. But I like what you're saying to, after the fact, say,
that makes people feel good.
Yeah.
But you have to work on that. And so there's less guilt. You want them to say it because it makes people feel good and it's polite. You don't want them to say it to please you.
Yeah.
Like, you want their ownership. And when you stay on their side, then they know that you're for them. Hey, I want you to say thank you because I want you to be a person that's polite and, you know, is an encourager to people. I don't want you to be, you know, but you'll figure this out. And that's one of those sayings I really love to use with my kids is, you know, you'll figure this, you'll figure this out, because it's a way of backing off and saying, hey, I'm not going to force this. And I hope that you'll figure this out because this will be good for you. So
I love that. Yeah. Because I feel like parents, and I am in this situation, I feel uncomfortable because I'm like, oh great, now I look like I don't know how to teach my kid. And my kid doesn't say thank you.
Yeah, stop.
Right?
I'll give you an example. I just heard this week a mom whose five-year-old drove one of those Fisher-Price Jeeps over a little girl's toe.
Oh.
Okay. And the mom was behind her, and she felt all the weight of that and all the judgment of that. And so she reacted in light of, oh my gosh, my child just did this horrible, horrible thing. And I'm going to react in, how dare you? Apologize. Apologize. Look what you did. And she dumped all that shame on that child. And the child honestly did nothing wrong. They're a five-year-old driving a Jeep. I said, did she do it on purpose? And she said, oh, no, she didn't do it on purpose. So she was careless and she made a mistake. And I certainly want my kids to feel free to make mistakes and learn lessons and to say, for themselves, oh, I didn't mean that. And I'm sure that little girl would have felt bad on her own, but instead she just, the point of the story was this little girl lost it and she couldn't get control of herself for, her mom said, 20 minutes. She never did apologize. And I said, you didn't give her enough time to feel, and I'm sure she would have felt sorry, but that little girl didn't make a mistake. She was being five and she hasn't learned to drive a Jeep. So I think when we're correcting kids for spilling milk, even if they were careless, well, then they were careless because they were three. And so we teach them that it's okay. Sometimes milk gets spilled. This is what we do. And then that keeps you on their side, because what happened to that five-year-old is now her mom's the enemy. And man, we don't want to be our kid's friend, but we don't want to be their enemy. We want to be the person that's guiding them. And if you think of being in a foreign city and you don't know anything, man, you stick to that guide. And I want you to think about it this way, because I love, people are afraid to make mistakes in their parenting. Hey, that guide could get lost and I wouldn't even know. So as long as I ultimately stick with my guide, and he shows me some stuff and he gets me to where I'm going, then it's all good. But I do need to trust that guide that he's going to take me and show me the things I want to see. Otherwise, I'm going to say, why are we with this guy? Let's get out of here. Does that make sense? So that's how we want our kids, is to know we've got information. We want what's best for you. Come follow us. It's good here. So
I love that. And I feel like I'm so toddler focused right now, because that's how young my kids are. But I know you have advice for parents of older kids as well. And we kind of went over this a little bit, but how do you think understanding the differences between your kids can improve your relationships with them?
Oh my goodness. Because as we've talked, they are wired so uniquely. When they know that we understand them for who they are and how God created them and love them anyway. So it's really, really helpful to teach your kids about themselves. Like saying, you know, you said you have a child that's not as outgoing or whatever, but you know, it takes you a little bit to warm up to people. And so to be able to speak that to them, and those things that are hard for your kid and easy for someone else, to teach them that and say, this is hard for you, but look at it's easy for them. But look at this thing that you find easy and they find hard. When they appreciate their differences, then I think they're able to build their identity and say, yep, I'm a whole person. These are my strengths. These are my weaknesses. These are things that are easy for me. These are things that are hard for me. And my mom knows me, loves me, and has my back. And when I make a mistake, it's okay, because people make mistakes. And I'm going to try to figure out what I learned from that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's perfect. Any advice for level 4 parents? Anything that we haven't covered yet?
I mean, there's just so much. Two personality types. I would understand yourself and your spouse too, because if you have a strong, dominant parent with a strong, dominant kid, that's dangerous. Like we talked about, it's recognizing, what do you have control over? I'm going to say, you need to go to your room. We're done. But I don't need to convince that kid that I'm right. Because I think that's sometimes where we want to go, is we want that 4-year-old to understand what he did wrong. And it's us releasing that and saying, you know what, in their 4-year-old mind, they didn't do anything wrong. So I'm not going to push this. I'm just going to say, it's time for bed. We're going to keep working on this. So I need to know, for those strong parents, when to back off, have the consequence be the consequence, but not drive it. And when you do the young man, oh my goodness. When you do the young man, see here, I'm in charge, you are basically asking your kids, please, can you rebel? Can you please rebel against me? Because now I'm the enemy.
So what do you say instead of that?
Okay, so if my kids, and I'm sure some of them have rolled their eyes at me, I can't remember because it was a non-event. Because I never slipped into, don't you dare roll your eyes at me.
Okay.
If they were being rude or disrespectful, I probably would have said, and like I said, these aren't even memorable, but I have 4 teenagers, someone somewhere must have rolled their eyes. I would have said, I'm not sure why you're rolling your eyes at me. That's not polite, and I'm not going to talk to you when you're being disrespectful. And then I'm just going to leave. And so I gave them no power there to upset me, to get me worked up. They got to see me draw a boundary, but I didn't engage in this negative, you know, you stop that right now, because you know what they're going to do? They're going to roll their eyes and they're going to stomp away. And then I'm the enemy and they're in a battle. But going back to the other part of it, is those kids that are level 4, they also can't have a wishy-washy parent, because they need to know, man, if I can't be in charge, who's in charge? Who's in charge? So that's one of the sayings I love, is when they're your kids' age, toddlers, to those strong kids, honey, you're confused who's in charge. And being really strong about, I've got this. And if you knew how many times I said, mom's got this, honey, you're confused who's in charge. And just very sweetly, very calm. But I'm a softer parent and my husband was the harder one. So it was teaching him, hey, you don't need to convince him why he's wrong. He's never going to get it at his age. And I need to stand up and say, no, it's okay. I've got it. We're not doing that. And being very confident, because if they can't be in charge, they want to know someone strong is. And just a funny story, my strong, strong kid went into second grade. I had found out he had one of the toughest teachers in the school, and she was her last year to retire. Everyone said how mean she was, and it was my first kid, so I didn't know, oh, we're supposed to check out the teachers. I don't know. So I approached him, and I said, hey, Michael, I hear you have Mrs. So-and-so. You know, I hear she's kind of tough. And he goes, you know, Mrs. So-and-so? No, she's fine. And the reason she was fine to him It's because she said, this is the line, and when you cross it, I know where that line is, and I know I'm going to get busted. So he loved when she would call kids out and, mm-hmm. you know, have them have consequences, because he was like, hey, she told you where the line was. Don't cross the line. What are you doing that for? Bust him. Whereas if I would have had my softer child, I would have called the principal and said, hey, he can't function in this class, because it would unnerve him to hear all that discourse. Like, he can't concentrate on his things if there's discourse. He's quiet. He's not going to get in trouble, but he also isn't going to be able to thrive in that environment where there's this firm, harsh teacher. So does that make sense? So the one loved it, and then the softer kid, I would have said, can we please have an encouraging teacher?
That's interesting, because I'm sending my three-year-old, he's going to be four, he's going to go to like a preschool, kind of an all-day thing starting this coming year. And I've never thought about, you know, well, maybe this teacher just really doesn't match up for his personality and I need to do something about it. I guess I was kind of thinking, well, this is the teacher he gets, and so this is what we're going to do.
I wait till I have a problem. Uh-huh. And so I usually let it go. And then if we have a tough year, then I'll be a lot, you know, if I do have a kid that needs a little bit more hand picking, then I'll step in. But, you know, my oldest, Michael, could have had anybody.
Uh-huh.
So he doesn't need that strong one. She just didn't bother him at all. So I probably have had only one out of the four, two out of the four that I've wanted to say, let's be careful. This one probably wouldn't thrive in this more critical environment.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to talk about your book. And then I also have some like random, I mentioned this to you before I tweeted out, if you have a parenting question, I'm talking to an expert today. So
not,
I have a couple random questions.
And that's good. Let's not
I'll call expert. You an expert. In my opinion, you're an expert.
The person she's, likes to talk about it.
she's not claiming she's an expert. Okay. So your book is called The Gift of Enough, Raising Grateful Kids in a Culture of Excess. And I love that so much, because I'm already struggling with that as my kids are super young. And I want to know kind of what inspired the book first.
That was the counseling and seeing that no income would ever be enough. Mm. And to realize that we live in a culture that emphasizes grades. We got to have these kids with good grades so they can get into a good college. We got to have the good college to get the good job. We got to have to get the good job, because then they're going to have a lot of money. Reason we want them to have a lot of money is so then they'll be happy. Mm. And if we miss the piece where no amount of money is ever enough until they understand how much is enough. And then any amount is fine. I mean, my kids know, I've got one that wanted to be a teacher. I was like, hey, you can do it. 30 grand. You can do this. Because clean is free. Man, I always tell them that. Like, clean is free.
Uh-huh.
I'll help you with your yard, you know, and we'll get it looking nice. It's going to be a tiny little house, and you're gonna thrive. But that's 30,000 enough for you. Yep, you can do it.
Well, I love that too. You said in your book, you might have like a brand new expensive car, but like it's going to get muddy and dirty and gross. And if you have kids, it's going to get really gross.
Oh, and I could get going on the car thing. So I do think that's a mistake I know that it's a mistake that it doesn't always have to be a mistake, but when you buy your 16-year-old a car and it's theirs, and you bought it and it's super nice, what we saw in counseling was the 28-year-old who realized, wait a second, the car I'm going to have to buy now is not as nice as the one I had when I was 16. And it just felt like something was stolen from him, that he couldn't even think of driving the kind of car that he could afford. And so what happens is people get into the car that they can't afford because their identity is somehow attached to what they're driving. And so our kids had a car to drive, but it was always ours. And so if anyone ever said, you know, I like your car, they'd say, it's not my car, you know, it's my mom's car, and they let me drive it. So I just have seen what happens when you don't realize that it's okay to not have nice things. You're just very unsettled, instead of saying, yep, this is not who I am. And an interesting thing in the book, you probably haven't gotten there yet, but the number one trait in non-materialistic kids. So what they did was they studied all these kids, and basically materialistic kids found more joy in their stuff and they wanted more stuff. So the things they had in common were those kids had higher media involvement, which would make sense. I'm seeing more stuff. I'm connected with what's cool. But the cool thing was the kids that were not materialistic, the number one trait was a nurturing mother. Mm. And that's so surprising. But if you think about it, man, if you've got parents that are pouring into who you are, like the way you are and how you're loved exactly for who you are, well, I don't need fancy clothes to show you who I am. I don't need a nice car to show you who I am. And so we sent all our kids into middle school with a very clear picture of who they are. And so they weren't as looking at, I need to have this to be cool. I need this to be cool. They just knew, hey, you know what? This is me and I'm pretty cool just like this.
How do you have those conversations, though? Because I'm obviously not going to be there for a while. You know what I mean? Because my kid could wear the same sweatpants to Parents Day Out or whatever every day, and he doesn't know or care. But when do kids start saying, well, he has this Under Armour shirt? And you know what I mean? How do you start having those conversations? I mean,
as they come. So yeah. Just like you said that, and I would say, that's okay. You know, he can have that. Those are more expensive. Here's why we don't have them. And if you want one, then let me know, because I'm going to need to have, you know, more money for that. Where do you think it should come?
Oh, yeah.
Let's maybe have fewer if you really want that. And so you're talking about it very matter-of-factly, saying, hey, do you want it enough to pay more for it? Do you like it enough? Do you like it because you like it or because they like it? And those are conversations we have from your age, is I'm not going to encourage you to like something because it's cool.
Mm.
Like, I want to know that you like this and why do you like it? And are you going to exchange some of your resources for it? Is it worth it? Will it be worth it later? Mm-hmm. And so you just build into them. I'll tell you one of my favorite stories from the book, since you're not there yet, but you just build into them this concept of, hey, buying anything is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to buy anything. I mean, food, I'm with you. Food, some clothes, some shelter.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, it's all a choice. And so when we are making purchasing decisions, we're talking about, you know, is this a good deal? Do I really need this? Is it better somewhere else? What should I wait to get this? So that's kind of the way that you're just functioning right now in Meijer with your three-year-old, is they can hear you deciding if you're going to buy that or if you're deciding to pass. And so my story of how this all kind of comes about, if you're raising them with this conscience of, I make choices, and my choices involve consequences and, you know, benefits. So we were in the changing room at the Monon Center, where there were the boys and the girls all together, the families in there, and they were probably, the older two were 7 and 8. And I just hear from across the room, it's the oldest one, Michael, and he's saying, 25 cents for a napkin? Who'd pay 25 cents for a napkin? He's like, Bri, come here, look at this. Mom, how many napkins do you get for a quarter? And, you know, and I'm looking at it, and I realize right away, you know, as he's standing by the Kotex machine.
Oh, what, yeah.
And I'm making the mad dash, but in his mind, he looked at it. It said napkins.
Uh-huh.
And in his mind, he was like, why would anyone buy napkins for 25 cents? But that's, and I told him those were really special napkins and a super good. But that's the idea that we want, is for them to look at things and know they have a choice whether to buy it or not. So it's very freeing. It's freeing for the kid that's a saver. And that's another thing that's innate, is a spender or a saver.
Yeah.
So two minor spenders, two are savers. You probably know what you are. And all it means is you get more joy from spending, the other get more joy from saving. And you've got to teach both of them.
Yeah.
Spenders got to learn to, you know, take it down. Savers have to learn to spend with joy.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Well, so, I mentioned this. I'm already terrified for when my kids are in fourth grade and they want to have what everybody else says. Stop saying I'm terrified.
No, you're not going to be terrified. You're going to say, bring it.
Well, so, and here's an example. For instance, it's a beautiful day and we're in the backyard and we're playing, and I think it's a nice day to have a popsicle. So I say, hey, Marshall, do you want a popsicle? Unsolicited.
Right.
One popsicle is never enough.
Uh-huh.
So you don't even want to offer one, but you want to offer one because you think, oh, this will make him happy and it's fun. We can do it together. Right. We can sit outside. What do you do when you know that offering one is just going to lead to a meltdown because he wants two and then he wants three?
Well, see, then that's great. So I would, if you know that, that's a great thing to teach, because to be able to say, no, one's enough, you know, and to preemptively do it for you, since you anticipate already that he's going to do it, and say, you know, at his age, you can say, you know, I want to give you a popsicle right now, but you know, you may not be able to think that this is enough. This is what we're going to have, is one. Do you want the one? And then let him have the fit. You speak so confidently. Mm. One's enough. That's okay. You can have your fit over here. I'm not sure why you're doing that, but one's enough. And think of the fit as him punishing himself for that discontent. Like, you don't need to enter into that. He's punishing himself. And that's okay. And when he realizes that you're going to stop reasoning why one's enough, you're just going to say that one's enough. And then he's going to accept that a lot better if you don't go into explaining it to him.
So still offer the one popsicle.
Sure. And then let him have the fifth.
Okay, because that's so many times I'm like, I don't even want to offer one, even though I know one will make him happy, but that makes a lot of sense. And I will, you know, I'll give in and give him two sometimes, but I shouldn't.
Okay, let's go there, because you got to admit, Lindsay,
what
now
do you do?
Now you've just found how your problem was created, is you just found he learns from you.
Uh-huh.
So you taught him that sometimes no, yes, means two popsicles.
Yeah.
So you taught that to him, so good for you. Now you know that he can learn, and so you taught it to him.
Yeah.
And if you go look at that behaviorist stuff, when that chicken pecks for corn and it randomly gets it, that's the chicken that's going to keep on pecking, because it's a random reinforcement. So when I see parents in stores, I do talk to them too. When their kid's pitching a fit about a toy, it's realizing that even if they're saying no, I bet sometimes they said yes.
Uh-huh.
And that's why that child's throwing a fit, is because he doesn't know if today could be a yes time or today could be a no time. And sometime I would bet that no, maybe this small thing is really what's driving the fit. And they actually, at the boutique stores, they have a thing called shut up toys. And they're $10 or less, and they put them right up by the cash register. And
the Target dollar bin.
They're there so that parents can say, not this, okay, this. And rather than a win, because if we're parenting for the short term, if we're parenting the child and not the man, then we won. Mm-hmm. Oh, yay. I got my kid to accept this for a dollar. That didn't cost me much. I did a good job with my kid today. But did you do a good job with the man that you're raising? Because now what you just taught that man was stuff makes him happy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That, you know, any stuff will make me happy. Mm-hmm. Like, can I have this? Can I have this? Can I have this? So they don't even care what it is. And so you're nothing personal, but that's what you did in order for you to be thinking, you know what, next time, man, you be strong 5 times in a row and you're going to see that those fits are not going to last at all like they used to. And that'll just be a memory for you. Call me. Let me know.
Right. It's just, it's so hard because when you're in a moment of desperation, you just want your kid to be quiet. You're like, fine, whatever, you know? And I think a lot of people fall into that trap.
That's it. And that's it. And you know what? If you can just have the picture of that man in your mind, for some people, apparently they have women, but you know, I'm raising 4 boys, so I'm always picturing that man.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking, is this good for that man for me to say no, okay.
That's a really good way to think about it.
Here's a way to get out of a trap, though, because I don't want to take away all your power. Here's an escape hatch, and that is, don't let the child think they changed your mind, because that gives them, you know, they can make their one statement, but if you say no, and then you still want to give in, just alter the situation a little bit so that you've changed your mind. Like, you can say something like, oh, man, I just thought of something. You haven't had any sugar today. You know, man, you've gone all day, and this is our sugar time of the day. Whatever you want to do. It's Thursday. It's Sugar Thursday. Like, whatever you make up, as long as you're the one changing your mind and not the, oh, all right, here. That's what you don't want. So, I mean, I think I've even done that before where it was just too much. I was at the end. I was picturing the man that I was trying to raise, and I just said, oh, my gosh, I just thought of something. Let's do by that. We're having company this week, and that way, we'll give it to the company. That's a great idea that I just thought of, you know. And so it ended it, but hopefully not with the, no, you just won me over. So that's just a little, you can't use that all the time.
Okay, I want to get into the Twitter questions.
Okay.
This is from my friend, this is from my friend Brittany. And she says, what do you do to make sure you're taking necessary time for yourself without feeling guilty that you're sacrificing time with your kids? Different kind of question.
Right. Here's what I would think of for your kids. Because I think parents over-entertain their kids. Over-entertain. And there is such a gift of boredom to be able to say, you know what? I looked you in the eye and we've connected and I know you and I've cherished you. And man, I love you and I enjoy being your mom. And we're going to have an awesome day. But I am not your plaything. Mm. And to be able to say, you know, they say I'm bored, and you say, that's okay, that's exciting. I wonder what you'll do. and you have things out and you have things organized, but man, I just did not enjoy playing with my kids, and you don't even need to edit that, because the reality is when you've got that strong-willed kid, I was always playing wrong. I was not doing the right thing with the guy. I was saying the wrong thing. I mean, sometimes it just was not fun to play with my kids, and I had a lot of kids so they could all play together. So that was the idea. So I would be thinking every day, I need to connect with every single one of these kids on a, we're good, man, there's nothing between us. I love being your mom. I love who you are. So there's your connection. Because we can also go a whole day of doing things and have never connected with our kids. Like, they're just people. They're just people we drive around. They're people we do, oh, stop this, do that, here, do this. And we don't really look them in the eye and connect with them and rub their back and do all those kinds of things. So with that in mind, then my goodness, I think the hardest thing is when we do try to take time for ourselves and then we put them as the bad guy that's stopping it. And it's just like, I just know a lot of young moms can't find time to shower. I just get in the shower. Like, I don't understand it. Just like, it'll be a baby screaming outside the shower. And that, and we're not going to resent him. He's not going to remember it. But we get to shower and we get to say, wow, I enjoy this showering with this screaming child. You know, we can reframe it. So I made sure that every day I had a Coke, and it was mom's Coke time. And that was just when I read my Bible, I read an article, I took a little nap, you know, I'm talking the 10 minute, you know, the revitalization, and I had a Coke. And I still remember one of the kids was really mad at me one time, and they said, the next time you take a nap, I'm going to wake you up. You know, that's some of the love that goes on in our house at that age. It's realizing, oh my goodness, we're not going to have that guilt, because part of what keeps us going is that time to back off and refresh. And, you know, what am I doing here? I'm not here to be their everything. Like, that's not my role. So I've never felt guilty about it, so I don't, like, stop being guilty.
You know, I honestly don't feel guilty about it either. And I've never had the shower problem. Like, especially when I have a newborn, because I'm like, well, the newborn can just sit and rock and play.
It's a purse.
Yeah. And even now, you know, my 15-month-old, I obviously can't let him wander around the house without watching him, but I'll just throw him in the pack and play, and if he cries, he cries.
Right.
And now I've gotten to the point where I just let him crawl in the shower with me, and that's fine, too.
And I think it would help you not be guilty if you thought, you know, boredom is good for them.
Yeah.
Being away from me, having quiet time in their room is good for them. So if we can think that us not being constantly engaged with them is good for them, that might take away some of the guilt, too.
Yeah. So I feel like your answer to this question kind of answers the next question I have. And this is from my friend Erica on Twitter. Erica Sarah, how do I know if I'm over planning scheduling the day for my toddler? I feel like I wake up every morning, every Monday, thinking, what am I going to do this week with him? And he's her son is probably, I think, like 18 months now. So he's pretty young.
And it's only going to get worse if you're trying to entertain. And there's a book out, I forget what it's called, but the gist of it is this title of, hey, can't we just play? And it's the idea of this mom was trying to plan her kid's summer, and the boys said to her, can't we just play? And it's recognizing that, man, having those margins is so important, and not to buy into the cultural lie that we need to be the ones. I'm not going to create an A student by having my kid in these special programs. I'm not going to create a star athlete by having these experiences. Like, those, again, are things that are innate. Like, they're wired in there or they're not. My kid that's going to struggle in school is going to struggle no matter what. I can be a little bit helpful, but he is not getting up to, wow, school's easy. Man, this is awesome. And my kids that aren't athletic are not going to become athletic because I sign them up all the way through. So I guess I would be structuring my days for mom, you know, and what does mom want to do so that mom feels productive and feels good. And, you know, a lot of times staying at home, we feel like, okay, what have I done? But man, you're there. I mean, that's what you're doing. Like, you're there. So you don't have to be there at the museum. You know, if we're home with our kids, then we're doing it just by being there. Little girl that I was reading over her shoulder in sixth grade when I was subbing, and she had a journal, and she said, my mom's there when I need her. She's there when I don't. And I just remember thinking, that is what we want for our kids. That we want to be there when they need us, And then when they don't, we're just there. We're not entertaining them. We're not organizing their life. We're doing, you know, what we need to do to feel competent in our day.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. You said when you go to the museum, you don't have to necessarily be right there, because I'll find myself kind of like getting my phone out or like kind of not paying attention because they're playing and they're having fun. And I kind of feel these judging eyes on me, but I'm like, I'm with this kid all day. He's fine right now. He doesn't need me to stare at him.
Right. And that's,
and I might be checking my email. You don't know what I'm doing.
Right. I mean, that's the judgment that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So it's recognizing you've got a plan. You're raising
doing
a man,
thing, yeah.
And this man's playing right now.
Yeah.
This is what he's doing.
Yeah, so. I love that. Well, and I think with her question, too, though, it's a little bit hard because her kid's 18 months, and I have a 15-month-old, so I get it because you're like, I think you almost want to plan something because you don't want him getting into all the cabinets and, like, you know what I mean? I want to get out of the house because I don't want to just sit there and follow him around so he doesn't pull a dresser on himself or whatever.
Right, and so do it for you.
Yeah.
But that... all that kid needs is you.
Yeah,
so
I love
you're
that.
You're doing that. Go wherever you want.
So here's another one that my friend Brittany brought to my attention. It's the feeling, the need to feel and be entertained. And so many people just give their kids iPads and the TV. And I let my 3-year-old watch probably more TV than he should. I don't hate the TV because I feel like the shows he watches are actually teaching him and they give me a chance to do things. But I have a big problem with him waking up in the morning and wanting to watch a show. The first thing he wants to do. And it is, I don't know how to break it. It's hard.
He's still not old enough yet, I don't think, to go, even if you've unplugged stuff, like when they're young, we have total control over that access.
Mm-hmm.
So we always talked about, I like the phrase some kids, like sometimes I just talk about, this is when they get older too though, but you know, hey, some kids get addicted to this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some kids watch so much TV that they don't know what to do with their time when they're not watching TV. It's a really healthy way to talk to your kids because you're not judging them saying, you're going to be addicted, you're going to do this. So you're just talking about some kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the idea, is from a very young age, mom's going to be careful because I want to be careful that you're not one of some kids that does these things that are unhealthy. So sure, this is healthy. Sure, this is reasonable. But when I start seeing that you're bored and you don't know what to do with yourself, now I'm seeing things that are unhealthy. So I might stop it totally for a week and say, man, I've seen some unhealthy things and we can't live like this where you don't know what to do. And rather than that being a punishment, so to speak, that's just something that we've got to do as parents, is watch that and say, hang on, can you turn that video game off or not? Because if you can't turn it off when I ask you to, you might be like some kids that are addicted. So it's so funny. I mean, we've never had a gaming system because nobody's ever bought one, and we just never had one in the house. But there's still games they can play. And every time I would say, like, can you shut that off or not? And they'd always be like, oh, I can shut it off. I can shut it off. Because they would know, hey, mom's watching to make sure that I'm healthy. And they should want to be healthy because unhealthy sounds bad, as it should.
Yeah.
So they should want to be unhealthy. So if you see them doing things that they, you know, we allowed our kids early on to watch some movies that had bad language.
Mm-hmm.
Never promiscuity, because I did not want them seeing promiscuity. I did not want them seeing cool guys that were all, I didn't want them to have that view of a man. I mean, we just ruthlessly watched that. I mean, there's a scene in Beethoven, which is rated G, where he's got her in the bedroom and he's wanting to kiss her. And, you know, I was like, nope, I don't want them seeing that. But you know what? You have a soldier that drops the F-bomb. That makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm going to watch is that you don't drop the F-bomb. But you're not a kid that swears. Sixth grade is what, I have a whole curriculum. We don't have enough time for this. Fifth grade is crap, pissed, and sucked. Those are gateway words.
Oh, okay.
So we talk about those, and this is why we're not going to use crap, pissed, and sucked. They're angry words. This is why. And we go through that. And they're gateway words. Sixth grade is when the really trashy stuff comes, and that's because kids are trying to be cool, so they're trying to use these words to be cool. This is what they're doing. And we're not going to need to be cool by the use of our, you know, swearing. That doesn't make me a cool guy because I can say, you know, this is full shit. Right. You know, that doesn't make me, oh, I'm so awesome because I said that. So that's the idea. So we let our kids watch movies that had swear words as long as they weren't then using that in there. And we have a very neat policy of trust and verify, where me and your kids have to know you trust them. But you know what? I'm going to verify that I should trust you. Mm. So it's different than stalking them. It's just periodically we check this, we check that. And then if you've been proven trustworthy, then man, we back off. And we haven't had a single teenager that's rebelled because they want to keep that trust. There's nothing they're rebelling from.
Well, you mentioned in the MOPS group, you don't even set real curfews, do you?
No.
Kind of.
Where are you? What are you guys doing? Oh, that sounds fun. When do you think you'll be home? Yeah, we've never had a curfew. Now, all my kids aren't all the way through, and the last
right.
one's different than the other three. So we may need to at the point when he's doing things that are not, you know, if he's not doing his part by letting us know, is he always where he says he is? Is he always doing what he says he's doing? Is he always coming home at the time he says he is? If not, then we're going to need to probably do something different. And then he'll know very well that that was because of him not being trustworthy, because he's seen his brothers haven't had to have curfews because they're always where they say they are.
I feel like as a parent of a teenager, though, I would just get nervous about, like, driving late at night, you know, whether or not they're doing anything wrong. I think I would lay in bed at, like, 10 and think, I want to go to sleep because I'm tired, but my kid's not coming home till 12 or 1.
Right.
Do you just lay there and get anxious, or?
Well, that's the biblical worldview of, you know, the Bible speaks so clearly in Philippians, do not be anxious about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we're promised a peace that transcends all understanding. So I remember just feeling like, okay, this is what I have control over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have control over these things, but I've poured into them, and, you know, I've verified what I can verify, and now this is on them, and I need to be able to go to sleep. And so, yes, I totally go to sleep.
That's awesome. Well, when I was growing up, we lived out in the country, and for me, you know, at the time I didn't think anything of it, but looking back, I'm like, I can't believe my parents let me drive home on those, like, windy roads. I mean, that's the dangerous part, is because I'm out there probably driving a little bit too fast because I'm 16 and I think I'm invincible. And I think we live in the city, and I think I would be less scared to have my kid coming home in the city than out in the country like that.
Sure.
Okay, so yeah, we're going to wrap up soon. I even have more questions, but we don't even have time to get to them. So we might have to do a follow-up session here in a couple months.
It'll be new stuff.
That's right. Well, yeah, and I feel like we'll probably have some listeners of parents of older kids that might want to hear more about the teenage stuff, because obviously we talked a lot about the toddler stuff. I'm just using you for advice right now for my own
crazy kid.
So I always ask people, like, what are you really into right now? Is there a book you've been loving, or a certain artist or music or food?
I just finished a book. Ironically, it's about teenage girls.
Okay.
So it's called Untangled, and I really enjoyed it. It's very encouraging for those parents whose kids are you know, trying to find their own way, trying to find their own space, breaking away, which I guess we've just always been good about letting our kids break away. Mm-hmm. And so it hasn't been hard because we've let them do things that are stupid, and then they learn that they're stupid, and then they know that they don't want to be stupid. But I think a lot of times parents micromanage, and you need to do this, you have to do this. Next, you need to do this. You're not going to get into a good college. And so the Untangled just really talks about how that teenager needs you to step back so that they can step forward, and how they do kind of shred parents. But if you see it as, hey, they're not shredding me, they're trying to find themselves, then it's a lot easier to look at that struggling girl. In this case, it's very much girl-centered. I just love helping teenage girls.
Mm.
So even though I have boys, that's how I get my girl fixed. So.
Do your boys, have you entered, like, boys having girlfriends yet?
Oh, it's funny you should say that, Lindsay. I'm the mom that is, like, so stalking them to ask out girls.
Aww.
And they've just had so many other things to do that it hasn't been something that they've done. It's actually my 15-year-old has a girl that he's got his eye on, and because I like her so much. I've said to him, I was like, we got to wait on her because she's special. I was like, we are not going to ruin that relationship as a freshman.
Uh-huh.
is a friend of the family. The mother knows that he's got the crush, and she's wonderful. So I said, before junior year, that summer, we'll go for it.
Well, yeah, because you know if you're dating as a freshman, it can't possibly last through out of high school.
Well, you know, I said, they're friends. So I was like, this is a very sweet spot. I said, you keep liking her, and you keep being her friend, and you see what God's going to do with this. But let's not ruin her.
That's so sweet. Oh, that's, well, and that's another thing we can talk about another episode another time is the respect thing just with girls, because I'm obviously a boy mom too, so that's really important to me. So I want to hear more about that. Anything you're not so much loving right now?
Oh, I can always get going on the promiscuity stuff. The normalization of that is troubling to me, that's our normal. Mm-hmm. That's our cultural normal, is you're going to be hooking up, having sex, mm-hmm. you know, that's just what we do. Mm-hmm. And every time I see it in movies and commercials and look how sexy I am, it's just hard to watch. Because my husband does marriage counseling.
Okay.
So you're seeing these broken, broken marriages. Mm. And you're saying, you know, we live in a culture that's seeped with this stuff. Mm-hmm. And we're wondering why these marriages are falling apart. So that's where I can get, I'll be at the gym working out on the treadmill and just see, because I can't read it. It's too far away. But I just see the sex, and it's frustrating.
Well, yeah. I mean, even in the show, like, the show I'm watching right now that I'm really into is Nashville. And there are so many sex scenes in that show. And as I've been married for 8 years, but every time I see this, I'm like, man, these people have sex, like, every day. Like, this isn't normal, you know? And it plants the seed in anybody's head that, you know, that this is how it should be, just because...
Right. Yep.
Like, come on, these people on the TV show do not actually do that. You know, and some of these people are married, some of them aren't, whatever, but it just makes it look like, oh, this is just what everybody does all the time.
Right, that's it. That's my problem.
Yes. I like it. I don't like your problem, but I like that you had something to bring to the table there. So, okay, well, this has been great, and I'll wrap up because we're at an hour.
Okay, super. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Okay, sounds good. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, everybody, that wraps up episode 9. Thank you so much, Marianne, for coming on the show. And thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope that you feel encouraged after hearing Marianne talk. And one of my favorite things that she said was, we don't want to be our kids' friend, but we don't want to be their enemy. We want to be the person that's guiding them. I love that. And there's so many other pieces that I love as well. Like I said, this was a special Mother's Day episode, and we will be back to regularly programmed episodes coming this Friday. So thank you so much, and have a great weekend, everybody.